music and talk radio about all things all genders. This is Intravenous, live on CJSF 90.1 FM, discussing and approaching contemporary gender issues through a feminist lens. Our goal is to educate, engage, and challenge the dominant hegemony.
Good morning and welcome to Intravenous for this Wednesday, November the 6th. My name's Robin. I am your host for the day, and not for the whole day, just for this episode of Intravenous. On today's show, I'm excited to have a guest in studio with me, Allison Clancy, who is the executive director at Swan Vancouver. Will be here to talk with us, and I'll explain a little bit more about what we're talking about after we get into and over a song break, just to put us a little bit in the mood. And maybe by the time that happens, the drilling in the background, if you can hear that, will have subsided, and we won't have that persistent nagging, but I'm doubtful. We're going to hear from Celsi, who is an electro R&B singer soundscaper, using ambience and rhythm to compose sounds that exist on the fringes of pop music and sometimes jazz. This is off her album Effervescence, and it is called We Could Be Together, here on Intravenous, CJSF 90.1 FM Campus Community Radio. And we're back on Intravenous. That was the artist Celsi and a track called We Could Be Together from Effervescence. My name's Robin, and I am joined by my guest in the studio. Allison Clancy is the executive director of Swan Vancouver, which is an organization that supports newcomer, migrant, and immigrant women engaged in indoor sex work. And she joins me in the studio this morning, as I mentioned. Welcome, Allison. I'm glad that this has worked out today. It's been sort of a couple of weeks in the making. Just for my audience's perspective, there was an exhibit in the Women's Center a couple of weeks ago that I tried to get Allison on to talk about, that we'll talk about later in the show. So I'm glad it worked out today. Welcome.
Thank you, Robin. It's really good to be here.
Yeah. And again, my apologies for the drilling above us. Our listeners are sort of well acquainted with it at certain points of time. I'll boost our volume up so that we can hear ourselves think. I want to start by just asking, how did Swan start?
Mm-hmm. So in 2002, there was a community health initiative that was examining the access to health care that women working in massage parlors had. So a team of women formed and went into massage parlors. But what they quickly realized was that the women working there had questions and concerns that were much broader than health care. They were asking questions about the law, about immigration, about criminal justice access, and employment issues. So out of those initial visits, the need for Swan was born. So the women continued doing outreach, and in 2008, Swan incorporated as a nonprofit. And the original name of Swan was Sex Workers Action Network, but in 2008, when we incorporated, by that time we had realized that a lot of the women didn't self-identify as sex workers, so our name was changed to Supporting Women's Alternatives Network, and we just go by Swan these days. And then in 2017, Swan became a charity and continues the same work that we started back in 2002.
Great. Very important work also. As I mentioned in the introduction, Swan exists to support newcomer, migrant, and immigrant women engaged in indoor sex work. But can you elaborate on this, on what this means, and maybe some of the ways that you fulfill that mission?
Mm-hmm, sure. So Swan's mission is to promote the rights, health, and safety of migrant and immigrant women engaged in sex work. And we do this through direct frontline services and also through systemic advocacy. So for frontline services, our core service is outreach still. We do outreach in massage parlors and also other indoor sites where immigrant and migrant women do sex work, from Richmond out as far as Abbotsford. So these visits with the outreach workers include dropping off safer sex supplies and providing information and community referrals about the law, safety, how to address violence if it happens, immigration, health, tenancy, and a host of social issues. Our volunteers and staff are trained, they're culturally competent and multilingual, which is very important in the work that we do. Then in 2014, we added a new program called NetReach. So essentially, it's online outreach. So we're providing the same outreach services, but via internet and communications technologies. And this adaptation was so very important because the sex work sector is ever-evolving, and more sex work is being facilitated online. So we ourselves had to modernize to keep up with these internet-savvy women to be able to meet their needs. And they have always communicated to us over the years that their anonymity and confidentiality is really, really important. So doing online outreach allows for that as well. And then on a systemic level, we're involved in advocacy on several fronts, including advocating for the decriminalization of sex work. So the decriminalization of sex work would remove the criminal laws associated to sex work. We feel there are already enough laws in the criminal code that could possibly, that could address every act of violence that is perpetrated against sex workers. There doesn't need to be a special set of criminal laws in regard to sex work. And what this would do would, this would allow sex workers to access employment standards and occupational health and safety like workers in other sectors avail of. And we have also been an advocate and a very strong vocal critic of mainstream anti-trafficking initiatives, which we feel do more harm than good. And I'll explain that a little bit later in our discussion. But one of the examples of the campaigns that we've done is raising awareness about the harms of a national law enforcement strategy called Operation Northern Spotlight. So every fall, police agencies across Canada catfish sex workers online and then carry out hotel room stings and raids on other indoor sites to rescue women who aren't asking to be rescued. So the systemic advocacy that we do in this area is so very important because daily we see the effects of these ill-informed initiatives. In the case of police raids, we see how sex workers lose valuable time focusing on evading police detection when the time could be better spent on implementing safety strategies to keep themselves safe.
Yeah, that that safety piece, I think, is a really important thing to think about when we're talking about decriminalization with sex work. I hear that that's one of the biggest arguments to it is, you know, how do we keep women safe, and not just women. There are all sorts of people who are doing sex work, but how do we keep them safe? Mm-hmm. And provide, as you said, some of the fallbacks that we as sort of legitimately employed people receive when we do the work that we do.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, for sure.
You talked a little bit about, you know, why the work that you do matters. Mm-hmm. But I'm wondering if you can sort of get a little bit more nitty gritty about, you know, why this matters and how what SWAN provides matters and to whom it matters. Mm-hmm. Because we got the umbrella, but I think that there's some real gems in there.
Mm-hmm, yeah.
On a mine down.
Yeah. So I think any time that a community has community members that can't access health services, cannot call the police if they're a victim of crime, they don't have any labor protections whatsoever, or even basic human rights to safety should be a concern for all community members. And apparently it matters to a lot of people who have mistakenly taken up the cause of anti-trafficking to address the concerns they have about mainly women. Oftentimes male sex workers and transgender sex workers don't enter into this equation. It's just a concern for women in the sex industry that's expressed. So many people have the misconception that women in the sex industry are trafficked. And there's a great amount of time, money, and efforts funneled into these anti-trafficking initiatives that do more harm than good. So what SWAN does is so very important because we are able to address sex workers' self-identified needs in a way that's not stigmatizing, not moralizing, or judgmental. And it's one of the very few places that women can access those types of services. And I think most importantly, SWAN doesn't impose the disempowering label of trafficking victim onto women who aren't trafficked.
Very, very interesting how that that mechanism in our brains, you know, thinks that just because you do sex work, you know, there must be some sort of exploitation, or not to say that there isn't a whole a whole heap load of that, but I also know that there's a lot of women who choose to do that kind of work because it is pretty well paying, you know, and for short periods of time, can get you out of debt, can pay your student loan off, it can do all sorts of things, and it's flexible, so. Yeah, part of the stigma too that, you know, faces people who do the work. My guest is Allison Clancy, the executive director of Swan Vancouver, and we're talking a little bit this morning about what Swan does and what the important work that they do is. How are the challenges facing sex workers different for newcomer, migrant, and immigrant women? And the differences maybe because the focus with Swan is on indoor work, massage parlors, those kinds of places. Yeah, and how is that different? What's their experience like? That's different that you can identify.
Well, first I'll just speak to a moment about the challenges facing sex workers in general, and in my experience, the stigma and the misinformation about the sex work sector is one of the greatest barriers to sex workers being able to access criminal justice system and all types of community services and supports. I think when it comes to immigrant and migrant sex workers, as I've talked about briefly already, it's the biggest challenge to them accessing services has been the uptake and the popularity of anti-trafficking campaigns. Oftentimes in mainstream media, you'll see articles about massage parlors, and in these articles, there's no recognition that these women have any agency whatsoever. And in our organization, which has been operating now for 17 years, this is not at all what we are seeing. These perceptions of immigrant and migrant sex workers are racist stereotypes, that the women are passive and docile and can't speak for themselves. And yeah, our experience has been these are very strong, resilient women who actually do have agency. So over the years, we've seen the conflation of sex work with human trafficking, with very little awareness as to the spectrum that sex work operates on. And you spoke briefly to this before. Sex work exists on a continuum where some individuals have complete control over their work to the other end of the spectrum where people are making decisions out of limited options and sometimes as a last resort. And then finally to the situation of human trafficking where there is no control over the situation. So the conflation and the misinformation has contributed to federal laws, government policies, police enforcement, unhelpful nonprofit services and funding streams that are only interested in addressing human trafficking. And unfortunately, this has contributed to the underreporting of violence because there's much apathy among migrant and immigrant sex workers that unless it's trafficking, the police and the criminal justice system really aren't interested in addressing other types of violence.
Oh, interesting. And tragic.
Yeah, it's very tragic. And I think a lot of people are contributing to these campaigns and not really realizing the inadvertent harm that they're doing. So many of the anti-trafficking approaches and policies, while well-intentioned, are actually counterproductive and are creating systemic vulnerability to exploitation and trafficking. One such example that we deal with on a daily basis is the immigration prohibition on sex work. So the immigration prohibition means that temporary residents, such as international students or others here on work permits, are not allowed to work in the sex industry. So while selling sex is legal in Canada, temporary residents are prohibited from doing it. So this paternal racist law, which again assumes that racialized women can't take care of themselves, has had the opposite effect than what has been intended with it. Mm. So over the years, we've seen that the immigration prohibition is being used as the root of exploitation, where unscrupulous individuals are threatening women and controlling them based on calling them in to police or Canada Border Services to have them deported. So currently, SWAN is advocating to have that immigration prohibition repealed because the way it's working on the ground is that women with precarious immigration status who are victims of crime are being treated as criminals via detention and deportation by the criminal justice system, whereas the actual criminals who are perpetrating sexual assault or robberies, this law enables them to act with impunity.
Isn't that the story?
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Not only in the sex industry for sex workers, but I think, you know, when we talk about sexual violence just across the sort of societal norms, mm-hmm. we see that in the news all the time, that the women who have been the ones who are victimized, right, are usually the ones who've are the most persecuted by the legal system. So what does that advocacy feel like? Do you feel like you're making strides and chipping away at the old block?
I would say for the most part it's pretty frustrating. The anti-trafficking rescue industry, the trafficking discourse that's dominant in Canadian society these days, is pretty fact-resistant. So policymakers, police, just aren't open to hearing these stories from the ground, how police enforcement or the laws are actually creating systemic vulnerability to exploitation and trafficking. So overall, in our advocacy on this issue, I would say it's a pretty frustrating experience from day to day.
I can only imagine that is the case. I think we're going to have a bit of a pause for a song break, and then I'll be back with my guest, Allison Clancy. We'll hear from the band Gemma off Feelings Not a Tempo. This is a track called Out in the Open here on Intravenous CJSF 90.1 FM Campus Community Radio.
Vision focused on blurry relation. Press stop. Missing focused on pressure to breathe in. Press stop. Thank you.
And welcome back to Intravenous on CJSF 90.1 FM Campus Community Radio, where we broadcast on the unceded territories of the Kwikwetlem, the Musqueam, the Squamish, and the Tsleil-Waututh peoples. My name is Robin, and I am in studio with my guest, Allison Clancy, who is the executive director of SWAN Vancouver, an organization that supports newcomer, migrant, and immigrant women who are engaged in indoor sex work. And we've been talking quite a bit about the challenges that face sex workers and sort of what the difference is for the newcomer migrant and immigration or immigrant women population. And I want to know, because sex work is often closeted and a tightly held secret. You know, people often don't admit that that's the work that they do. How do you connect with the people? How do you reach out to them, and how do they reach into you? Mm-hmm. Because I'm sure it's a two-way avenue.
Yeah. As you can imagine, this work is really challenging to connect with a population of women who are doing sex work, but many of whom also have precarious immigration status. So it's that doubled layer that we have to break through. So peer referrals and word of mouth is what has enabled SWAN to connect with the women who, over the years, have welcomed us in to very private spaces. These women are quite rightly skeptical of, air quotes, helpers. Oftentimes, people in helping professions have good intentions, but the services can come from a place of unexamined privilege, moral views about sex work, and can be focused on getting women to leave the sex industry before they're ready to do so, or in fact it's even safe to do so. For example, not until there's other employment in place or stable housing is in place. So the other key to the success that we've had is that we offer culturally competent low barrier services as well. We're very aware of the importance of anonymity and confidentiality among the population. So we don't require any legal names to provide services. We don't have a formal intake process or form or anything like that. And then I think we, over the years, most importantly, have taken direction from the women themselves and keep evolving our services based on what they have identified that they need. So from that, I had mentioned earlier, we implemented the online outreach program in 2014, and that really has been successful because women can contact us over the phone or text message or in through various social apps, and they don't need to identify themselves, so we can provide services in that way. And then I think the other thing to consider as well is the external factors which really we have to contend with and really impede our access sometimes. So in 2014, when Canada implemented new prostitution laws, there was a lot of uncertainty at that time in the community as to if or how the laws would be enforced. And that had a really big impact on the services. We were shut out from certain locations at that time because, for example, women thought, well, maybe if I accept condoms from you with the new laws, they could be used as evidence of sex work happening on these premises. So that was really detrimental. And then at times when police carry out raids again, thereafter we are shut out again because women may be fearful that we have shared their information or tipped off police, which of course we never do. We don't work in collaboration with law enforcement in any way. I think there's the ongoing stigma and skepticism of outsiders, but from time to time there's external factors that we have to work our way through as well.
Mm-hmm. Right. Yeah. And not surprising that people engaged in sex work are skeptical and don't trust authority organizations, authority figures, because often those people are not working with them. Mm-hmm. They're working against them. Mm-hmm. So, that helps to make your job challenging, I'm mm-hmm. sure.
Yeah.
What are, again, some of the services you provide in the community? You mentioned a couple off the top of the show, but what are some that are accessed by the people who connect with SWAN?
Mm-hmm. So the population of sex workers that we serve have very different needs than, let's say, street-based sex workers. So we rarely, if ever, receive any calls about homelessness, poverty, mental health and addictions. The calls that we received are primarily related to health, which health access. For the women, of course, they don't always want to use their legal names. Sometimes they don't have MSP or health insurance. And there are also fears that going to see a doctor or a nurse may somehow tip off authorities. Which is not unheard of. A couple of years ago, Fraser Health Authority did have a policy where undocumented people who were accessing health services were put on the radar of Canada Border Services. That policy, I understand, has since been changed. But they have very real fears of accessing the healthcare system. So finding healthcare providers who will provide services to women with precarious immigration status is quite difficult at times. Then the other questions that we deal with are related to criminal justice, but they're not asking us for protection from police. By police, they're asking us for protection from police and Canada Border Services. And I had just talked about the criminalized environment in which the women work and how they lose such valuable time trying to evade police and Canada Border Services detection. So the work is really quite different when it comes to sex work supports and services than with the types of services that, let's say, organizations, sex work organizations in the downtown east side would be providing to street-based sex workers.
Right, yeah. You know, it strikes me as you're talking about the clients who are trying to evade the police intervention and, you know, the valuable time that can take up, but also just the increased danger of being sort of double closeted, I guess.
Mm-hmm.
You know, if you're doing sex work and not talking about it, and then, you know, it's behind even another closed door, the instances of vulnerability increase
mm-hmm.
Because of that. And so, you know, if we could just be a little bit more out in the open about it all,
mm-hmm.
then safety increases.
You know,
violence doesn't happen generally out in the public eye. You know, where it happens is behind closed doors. So we'd be better off in oh so many cases to just have less stigma and less precarity. There's quite a rich website that SWAN has, lots of services and resources and a short list of organizational objectives. And the last one, which is certainly not the least concerning of them, refers to consequences that can result from conflating sex work with human trafficking. And we have touched upon this a little bit, but I think this is a really important aspect of what can get confused mm-hmm. between what we're talking about. So can you elaborate on this and expand upon the differences?
Yeah. So I've talked a little bit about how sex work or the exchange of sex for money or other material items exists on a continuum in which some people do sex work from a very privileged place and good circumstances, and they have full control over their work. To the other end of the spectrum where there is limited options, and finally to the end of the continuum where there may be no control instances of human trafficking. And unfortunately, few people in society understand the complexities of the sex work sector and view all involvement in the sex industry as forced. And then this is compounded by media and news, and where it just looks like it's all bad all the time. We don't deny that violence happens, exploitation happens, and trafficking happens, but it certainly isn't all bad all the time. And viewing the sex industry in this way, I understand why it works for a lot of people in society, because it creates a role for a helper or a supporter. It's easily identifiable to feel like you need to help women to exit the sex industry. However, when it comes to better understanding the sex industry and realizing that men, women, and transgender folks just want to work safely, without discrimination, and have the same labor protections as people who work in other sectors, it's much more difficult to define your role as a helper. So what I would say to those people, just to make sure that you aren't doing inadvertent harm, is to contact your local sex work organization if you are concerned about individuals in the sex industry. It doesn't make sense to contact an organization that wants to get rid of the entire sex industry. That is just not realistic. It's just not going to happen. So why not work towards sex workers achieving more rights, and particularly labor protections? And the best way to do that is to volunteer your time or your money or your efforts at a sex work organization.
I can imagine that some of our audience was very relieved about what you just said, and some of our audience might have been not relieved about what you just said, because there are such differing values and moral judgments about what we're talking about today. But education is really, really important, I think, when we're talking about sex work and what it is and what it means for the people who are doing it.
Yeah.
Because it does look different.
Yeah.
Right?
And I'm really happy that you brought up the idea of values and beliefs, because what we've seen over the years is that people often impose their own moral values and belief ideas about sex and who should be exchanging sex and how, and the norms of sexual exchange in society, imposing their own personal beliefs and values onto sex workers. And it's okay to have your own personal beliefs system about sex, but we need to be really cognizant when we are doing that, imposing it onto sex workers, onto an issue that perhaps for some of us we don't understand very well. So there needs to be a separation and an acknowledgement that this may be happening.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. I mentioned at the top of the program that I tried to have you as my guest maybe 2 weeks ago or 3 weeks ago, when the Simon Fraser Students Society's Women's Center, which just lives above us in the same building here, was hosting an exhibition of a project that you were involved with, or that Swan did, called Chocolate or Chicken Bones, which was a photo art exhibition. Maybe you can tell us a little about that project and how it came into being and what it is, and mm-hmm. if people can see it, and what you learned.
Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
Okay. So in 2018, we invited a number of migrant and immigrant women who do sex work to take photos to illustrate aspects of their day-to-day lives. And the women met regularly to share and discuss the photos that eventually became the exhibit. And the purpose of the exhibit was to provide information, of course, about their lives, but also, and perhaps most importantly, to dispel the myths and stereotypes most commonly associated with Asian women who do sex work. And more often than not, that stereotype and misunderstanding is that they are trafficking victims with no agency. So the project, the photos don't actually center on sex work at all, but focus on other aspects of the women's lives that they themselves chose. So the themes were families, homes, hobbies, dreams, and travels. And together, what these photographs did was that they presented complex, active, multidimensional human being, a very different narrative that is presented in anti-trafficking discourse. And it very much countered the one-dimensional stereotype of immigrant and migrant sex workers that are the basis for so much of the public discourse around trafficking. So the impact was really great. Photo Voice is such a powerful, impactful methodology. And for us, it was really important to find a platform that the women could safely and anonymously represent themselves. So Photo Voice was perfect. The impacts, we knew that they were going to be big. And we had a guest book that attendees to the exhibition could sign. So I'll just share just three of the comments that were made in the guest book.
Great.
The first is this exhibit is thought-provoking. It allows us to look at sex workers beyond stereotypes. The second, this is a very good exhibition. It makes me think we need to keep rethinking our laws and law enforcement and how they affect people. And finally, your bravery and courage to speak out and end stigma is inspiring. These pictures are beautiful and a fun glimpse into a world that needs more normalization and equality.
Beautiful.
Yeah. And maybe I'll just speak to the title of the exhibition, which it's a little bit peculiar. So this came from one of the photographers, one of the women who participated in the project. And again, this quote that she made, from which the title came from, really dispels the stereotypes of these women. So she said, "People think we are like chocolate, that we are sweet and you can just swallow us and consume us. We are not chocolate. You can't just swallow us and forget about us. We are like chicken bones. We will stick in your throat." So I think that just really speaks to the tenacity of these women, and that that quote just in itself, I think, goes a long way to dispelling some of the misperceptions about who these women are.
It has sass.
Oh, it does.
Right?
And the women have sass.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. When you're dealing with customer service and with people in general, I think that, you know, you have to have a certain personality, mm-hmm, that, you know, allows you to be fluid and flexible in a lot of ways, but also, you know where the buck stops.
Yeah, and have boundaries.
And have boundaries.
Yeah.
And I think that's definitely part of one of the things that is, you know, as we've been talking about, contributes to the stigma, is that often sex workers are thought to have no boundaries. Mm-hmm. You know, that it's sort of a full in kind of a thing.
And sex workers are experts at consent. And I think general society could learn a lot from
them. Could learn a lot. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah, absolutely. Swan has another project that is longer, more multifaceted, mm-hmm, kind of in process.
Yep.
that has to do with the anti-trafficking advocacy. Harming while trying to help is sort of what it's called. Do you want to talk a little bit about that and what the multifacets are and what the goal is, hopefully, of having this project?
Yeah, so the goal of this project is to raise awareness about the inadvertent harms of anti-trafficking campaigns, which is the theme that's come up over and over throughout our discussion today. For some people, it may be the first time that they're hearing that there are inadvertent harms coming out of these campaigns. And then some may be more aware that there are harms, but unable to articulate exactly what that harm is and how it plays out on the ground. So it's been in the works for quite a while, and we just received funding, and we're really, really excited about it. The project will launch in spring 2020. So it's a three-pronged multimedia project. The first is... I think it's a 5-minute animated video that will tell the story of the harms of anti-trafficking. So it will delve into the ways in which sex trafficking is being used as a red herring to get people to not think so much about labor exploitation and labor trafficking and all the government policies and corporate policies that are contributing to that. And just really raising awareness of the harms to sex workers that are coming out of these campaigns. So it will be in language that's very accessible to the layperson, and it will tell a story and hopefully open a lot of people's eyes. The second part will be a... I'll call it a guide or a toolkit. So now you know, well, what do you do with this information? So we're hoping to prompt actions that if you know how to identify a harmful campaign, how do you approach them? What do you say? How can you join with them to maybe do something that is helpful rather than harmful? And the third prong of the project will be a webpage where people can share stories of what change they have participated in. So what transformations have happened. You learn that perhaps the campaign that you were contributing to previously, you didn't realize that was causing harm. You approach them, you work together, and this is the outcome. And I think one of the main purposes of this campaign is to really drive home the point that any anti-trafficking campaign must include the people it purports to help. So whether that's sex workers or if it's workers in other industries where there's exploitation, the design and the delivery of an anti-trafficking campaign must involve those people. So that is what we're working towards.
Nothing about us without us. Mm-hmm. Yeah. Such an easy and makes sensible sentence, but really difficult to enact sometimes, especially when we get enthusiastic about something that we feel is, you know, part of our mission to as helpers.
Yeah.
But yeah, how do we help in the best way possible?
Mm-hmm. And that has to be taking direction from sex workers themselves.
Right. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
Which has always been the basis of our work at SWAN.
There was something else that you said, and unfortunately now it's, you know, mumble jumbled up in my brain with other things, but maybe it will come back. Mm-hmm. Just wary of the time, with just 5 minutes left or so. Mm-hmm. I want to just end by asking if there's anything else we need to know about SWAN, or anything we need to know about the things that we've been talking about in general today.
Yeah, you mentioned our website before. We are actually really excited that at the beginning of December, we're going to be launching a new website. So I would encourage listeners not to look on our website right now. Although it has a lot of information, it's outdated, and the work that we've been doing all these years is not well represented at all in the way that we would like. So just hang on to the first week in December and check in on our website then. And again, I would say in the spring, check back again if anyone's interested in the Harming While Trying to Help project. We're really excited about the launch of that. And I think finally, follow us on social media. We're more active on Facebook than we are on Twitter. But in an hour, I can only scratch the surface of these complex issues. But on our social media, we are very active in sharing articles and current news and issues related to the things that we've been talking about today. So if anyone has their interest piqued by today's discussion, they can certainly find out so much more information about these issues on our Facebook page.
Fantastic. I will also make sure that when I post the audio to this program, in the description of the audio, I can link the Facebook page so that it's easy for listeners to find if they want to follow up and follow you and, you know, like the things that you're doing. Fantastic. I have been educated today about all sorts of things. So thank you so much for coming on and spending the hour. I think that, as you say, we could probably really delve in and spend another hour talking about things that that affect the community of sex workers and why we need to be paying a little bit more attention, if not a lot more attention, to what their personal experience is, rather than just looking at it through the microscope of society. So thank you. I appreciate that. Allison Clancy, the executive director of SWAN, has been my guest today. Thanks so much again. And we're going to leave out with a song before Democracy Now! Comes on the air. This is Jay Sum off Anico and a track called Tenderness. I just know that